Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. To Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today is a Friday afternoon. It feels like a cool fall day today here in North Carolina. Leaves have been falling, so that's when I see leaves falling, I know it's fall. But it has been like a little mini heat wave during the week, and it just feels so great out there today. Today's date is October the 21st, 2016. On today's program, we will do a second program this week on looking back at the Black Panther Party. They turned 50 years old. Well, not really, because they were destroyed by USA Inc. through COINTELPRO, assassinations, framing people. That's why we have political prisoners today. So we will be talking to not a former Panther, but how would we describe them? As a person who grew up as a child or as a young person and was introduced to the programs, the community programs, sometimes they're called survival programs, that the Black Panther Party had. They were really a social political group. They were taking care of the social needs, social welfare needs of the communities that they serve, as well as working to control politics and the local government, whether we're talking about community control or the police. And of course, we know when we're talking about slave catchers, it was the slave catchers' brutality back in the 60s which gave rise to Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton developing this ideal to create a group to confront that violence, to protect the people in the community. And they came together, came up with a 10-point program that would be easily understood by the masses, didn't want to make it real complex or anything like that. And it had these 10 points on there, a list of demands. And Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton put that together, and I believe they published it on October the 15th, and that was when the party was born, the very first chapter in Oakland, California. So we are continuing looking back over the 50 years since the founding of the Panthers. Whenever we do these sort of reflections, I just ask people that they compare what you read, what you watch, as there's many pieces of news footage, and they also put out their own news or propaganda. As we had spoke to Sister Jonina Abram Irvin, who was the last editor of the Panther newspaper, but there is, when we look back and we see what the community was going through then, just oppose that with what's going on now. And some people would say that it has gotten worse. So that is what we will be doing today. During the second half of the first hour of today's program, we will be joined by Ross Munyega Nokashore. I have had the pleasure of working with Ross. Again, he is the person, I probably didn't even mention his name, who was exposed to the Panthers as a young person through one of their community programs, and he became active in the movement, and he's still an activist and a revolutionary. So we will be getting his thoughts and reflections on the Panther, Black Panther Party, and the 50 years of black struggle since, which we have seen an increased period or an increase in resistance in the black struggle during this period right here. I would say there's been an uptick after basically no movement. I don't want to say nobody was trying to counter these racists or addressing these issues, but it really wasn't wide participation. And I don't even want to say what we see now out there is wide participation, because it's not. But you haven't seen so many young people really get energized and motivated to address the system since the young people of the Panthers. I will be 50 years old in November. So I was born about a month, few weeks after, after they were founded. So during my course of my life thus far, I'm certainly can commentate on what I saw. And certainly many other people who listen to this program, some older than me, some around my same age, some quite a few decades or so younger than me. So we can always use our own lives to look back in terms of the period of struggle, how much progress was made, what losses did we suffer, what setbacks in the struggle. So it is great to do these type of programs and do a self-assessment of where we are today in terms of resistance. So he will be joining us again. Looking forward to speaking to Brother Ross. Used to work with him for over a year in producing Black Autonomy Federation Radio, which was on this network for that year. He is one of the founders of the Black Autonomy Federation, and he and Sister Jonina, who was with us on Tuesday, was that Tuesday she was with us? Yeah, they co-hosted, co-produced a course with Sister Jonina's husband, Lorenzo, a former political prisoner who for a time had lived in Cuba as he sought political asylum in Cuba, but eventually did come back here and was held for a time as political prisoners. But worked with all three of those in the production of the program that they were doing, which was to just inform people about their movement and the different people they were working with, different groups they were working with, just to disseminate information. So just to give you a little background on Brother Ross, so I don't have to go through this when he comes on, or I want to give him as much time as possible to share his thoughts and reflections. But his bio, let me just read his bio. Again, I mentioned he's a veteran activist and revolutionary. His name is Ross Munyega Nokashore. He was exposed to the Black Panther Party through one of his programs for students in Compton, California. Ross is a member, co-founder, organizer, and presently international coordinator within the Black Autonomy Federation. He is the former program coordinator of the Black Community Youth and Resource Center in Regina, Saskatchewan, that's in Canada, and was active in several black revolutionary nationalist groups in the early 1970s. He was born and raised in Southern California within the Compton, Watts, and L.A. areas. Munyega started with the L.A. chapter Black Panther Party as a youth, to leadership within black student organizations in high school, to the Black Student Union while in university. He worked with Michael Zinzon as a organizer of the Los Angeles-based Coalition Against Police Abuse and RAM. In the 80s, he became attracted to the ideals of anti-authoritarian class-based revolutionary anarchism and has worked tirelessly in projects benefiting the African, Black, working class, and poor. He has over 45 years of organizing experience and has worked behind the scenes in building many community youth and student organizations in both Canada and throughout North America. He lives and works in Regina, Saskatchewan, and still very much active in grassroots-based autonomous community organizing. So as I stated, Brother Ross has a wealth of information as he has been engaged in the Black liberation struggle since a young, very, very young man, back to his days in Compton, California. So it is certainly good to speak to people who had a direct connection to the movement and whose lives were shaped. And I don't want to speak for Brother Ross, but I can't imagine being that close to real Panthers, which I never had the opportunity to as a youth growing up, even though they had some chapters in the chapter in Detroit when I was a very young person. I just was not exposed to them at that time. But again, it's great to talk to people like that because they can share so much insight from their experience in Black struggle. So that's what we'll be doing on the second part of the first hour of the program. After we talk to Brother Ross, I do have some clips that I want to share of Bobby Seale talking about the 10-point program. I think that question actually came up on, I'm not sure if it came up on this program, it came up on the network, and it may not have even been on this station. Wherever I observed or heard or read this conversation, people were talking about exempting Black people from military service and why the Panthers, yes, it was on the context of white supremacy during one of the book study nights, and they were looking at the book written by Sam Greenlee, the name of which just escaped me. What was the name of that book? One of my all-time favorite movies. They kept it out of the spook who sat by the door. And that came up about military service, and Mr. Greenlee, who had served in the military, said he disagreed and people could join the military and get skills and what have you. And did that contradict with the view of the Panthers? And so I just provided some background, and the Panthers were coming at it from the perspective of veterans. Many of them were veterans. Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton weren't. They were college students, but many of returning Vietnam veterans did gravitate towards the Panthers and join the Panthers. And just think about it. Back then, they were just drafting Black people, another way of destroying the Black family, getting rid of Black males, draft you to go kill other people across the waters. And then in a clip in a jailhouse interview that Huey Newton gave when he was facing trial, manslaughter, I believe, for killing a police officer and wounding another allegedly during a street battle, which his trial ended. They tried him like three different trials. It ended twice in a hung jury and what have you. And they were like, no, he talks about sending Black people all over the world to oppress other people for the racist system that I call USA Inc. So we will listen back to what Bobby Seale said, what Huey P. Newton said. I also want to share a clip from another Black Panther Party who is a party member who is a political prisoner and has been so since the 1980s, at one time being on death row. And I'm talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal, and an interview he gave some time ago about the corporate media. So definitely, as a person who runs a media organization whose primary mission is to produce media to provide people with an alternative source of information and alternative views and perspectives, and of course my perspectives is of that of a black man behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So many people that I admire or read about or study, they have talked about the importance of media in the propaganda wars. And that is, you know, it's just so important. I can't stress that enough. So, but before we get to all of that, again, we will be talking to Brother Ross in about 20 minutes. Let's just go over some of the news of the day. Let me go ahead and grab this printout. As regular listeners of the program and podcast subscribers know, we had did a interview with a mother of one of the victims of the raid, COINTELPRO light raid that was conducted against a community in Bronx, in the Bronx, New York. I believe it was the lady's name was Paula. I can't remember her last name, but that is where 120 young black men were indicted on conspiracy charges, very dubious charges, and they had their first court date. I believe it was on October the 19th. Yeah, they had their first court date, and the system just playing all kind of games, did not allow family members to come into the courtroom. And it doesn't matter whether or not they were family members, they're public citizens. They pay taxes. That's their courtroom. And how dare these people, these so-called officers of the court, keep them out of it and playing these games with these people on this very stressful day for them. So I'm just going to read from the press release that was sent out by the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, NYC. Actually, I had put in a request to them for an interview on this very subject, but it was sent to me again today. So I'm not going to share all of it because it's like several paragraphs long, but just give you an idea of what happened. I'm going to read the first two paragraphs, hoping to get the representative in this press release. I sent her a request yesterday, actually. Today, families, friends, and supporters of the Bronx 120 traveled to 500 Pearl Street to be present at the initial court date since their arraignment on April 27 for many of the young men indicted on the Parrish indictment, quote-unquote. After the press conference, families and supporters went into the court building. Upon arrival, however, many family members and members of the press were directed to an overflow room. This happened despite the fact that there are larger courtrooms in the building than the one being used. Furthermore, according to reports from people who were able to get in, the courtroom was not full and no one was occupying standing room. Standing room is often allowed in big cases and at the discretion of the judge. In the overflow room, only one of the two TV monitors was on and was inaudible due to static. A family member left the overflow room to try to get into the courtroom and was rudely ushered out by many court officers, even though it was clear the room was not filled. Only after multiple requests was the family member permitted entry into the courtroom. During court recess, other family members in the overflow room noticed that there was additional seating available and proceeded to make their way into the courtroom. Soon, nearly every family member present arrived collectively at the courtroom demanding access to the hearing. Again, this is a public hearing. Again, doesn't matter that these are their family members, but they are members of the public, taxpayers, in fact. The court officers, including undercover detectives, told them to leave under threat of arrest. These threats quickly became more forceful as the officers demanded that they all exit the building. Ultimately, because of the utter disregard for families' access to the hearing through purposeful neglect of audiovisual equipment in the overflow room and denial of families to enter the courtroom despite seats being available, almost no family members were able to witness it. So, again, it does have more details, but you can go to btrcommunity.com. I believe article may have been posted there, but I want to get some people's schedule, possibly even family members, if we can get the sister we interviewed on again to discuss another experience. I mean, she talked about her and her daughters being terrorized during this shock and awe operation on this black community to round up all these young men on these dubious charges, which really, as I stated a couple of times, is I look at it as retaliation against communities who stood up to the NYPD slave catchers and challenged them in court over stop and frisk, which ultimately was ruled unconstitutional and a violation of their rights. So I look at this unprecedented move in the history of New York, even when they had all kind of mobs, Italian mobs, Irish mobs, Jewish mobs during Prohibition. You did not see this kind of mass roundup of people in New York on any kind of conspiracy or RICO charges. No, but they say that for young black men barely into their adulthood. That, again, that just tells you what type of country we live in and why the need for struggle is very real, as it has been any point in history in the past. It's just as much needed today as it has been ever at any point in time in history. Because things, I don't know if we can accurately say things are worse now than it was, let's say, for we know things were terrible for the victims of slavery, but for the free black colonists who at the birth of this nation were subjected to disenfranchisement and racism. Doesn't matter that they lost their lives, some of them did, and put their lives on the line to fight against the British and win the Continental War, because the war wasn't won until they entered the fight after the racist George Washington lifted the ban on them serving. So now, back then, all we have is newspaper accounts, and some of those things may not have even survived. But today, we have technology, we have video, audiovisual equipment that fits right in the palm of our hands, so we can document it. The people themselves, the community themselves, can document it. But it is a fact that there are more people enslaved on prison plantations today than there was any at any time when there was pre-1865 slavery, before the Civil War. There are more people, and if we just limit it to black people, there are still more people enslaved on this continent today than any point in its history. So that's saying something too. So we do look forward to getting more news on the Bronx 120 situation. Let me see. Please go for more information. You can go to Bronx 120. So that's Bronx120.org for more information. See, we still have a few minutes before we get to break at the bottom of the hour, and a few more minutes, about 12 minutes, and we should be connecting with Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore. It took me a long time to learn how to say his name, and I'm still not even properly pronounce it, I bet you, so he'll correct me when he come on air. Some of the other news that's I want to share some news on a political prisoner. I used to produce and co-host a weekly program on Sunday nights called Political Prisoner Radio, but the other co-host had some issues with the system herself, hit a very rough patch in her life, unable to continue on, and I'm already producing and hosting just too much, and I was feeling overworked. So I'm going to start including a segment called Political Prisoner on Black Talk Radio News. So this will be the first story that I'm going to share on our political prisoners. This comes to you from our group. What's the name of the group? The name of the group is Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War. That's very simple. Yeah, so we have posted some information on btrcommunity.com in that group. New York City Jericho Movement Branch sent this out in an email blast. I shared it in a group, but let me go ahead and share it with you, the listening audience. It says, "Greetings, friends and comrades, political prisoner, Seth Hayes needs us again." And Seth is indeed a Black Panther. Seth has been suffering from uncontrolled diabetes for over 15 years. His sugar goes up to the 400s and then down so low he falls into diabetic comas. He has had three such cold blue diabetic comas in the past 2 months. Each diabetic coma he goes into could end in death if not noticed and treated right away. We are asking that Seth be given an insulin pump, a sugar monitor immediately to avert these near fatal incidents. He has just recently been seen by an outside endocrinologist who recommended he be issued advice. So here's a medical professional hired by the system telling the system he needs this device. The NYSDOCCS is aware the situation is moving in the right direction, but it is not fast enough. We cannot afford to have another incident of low sugar. The last coma just happened earlier this week on Monday, and Seth had to spend the night in the hospital. The sugar monitor sends a loud warning if his sugars are beginning to get either too high or too low, and the pump allows him to use small dosages of insulin when needed, along with his eating schedule and daily activity. We therefore urge you to call Right and Facts to demand immediate provision of an insulin pump sugar monitor to Robert Seth Hayes, number, and this is prisoner number 74A as in Apple 2280. We are thankful that the DOCCS has been more responsive to Seth medical needs lately, but Seth needs this device immediately. So the phone numbers and the fax numbers are, the phone number is 518-457-7073. That's 518-457-7073. The fax is 518-445-7553. That, again, the fax number, 518-445-7553. And of course, they thank you for your time and effort. You can write Mr. Hayes, Robert Seth Hayes. His number again is 74A2280, Sullivan Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 116, Fallsburg, New York 12733-0116. Again, this information comes to you via the New York City Jericho Movement. If you want to learn more about Mr. Hayes and his role in Black revolutionary struggle, as he took part in different formations as well, including the Black Panther Party, I think I posted a picture with his bio, some of that background information, but you certainly can look him up. It's Robert Seth Hayes. You just put Black Panther Party, Robert Seth Hayes, to find out more about this political prisoner and prisoner of war. I think he's in there. He was convicted on charges related to protecting himself, perhaps having to use deadly force against a slave catcher. Again, COINTELPRO, it did exist, and I would surmise to you that it still does exist. But the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, it's not a secret any longer, but ordered the FBI, who often work with state police and city police, local police departments, to target these people for assassination, to set them up for crimes. And I would say would even go so far as to sacrifice the life of an officer just so they could frame their targets with the killing of the officer, meaning that some of these officers were killed by friendly fire. And then the Panthers were framed, the individual, whatever, Panther was framed for it. Same thing going on with Assata Shakur, who's down there in Cuba. All right, so we've reached the halfway mark. We will be joined by Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore here in just a bit as we get his reflections on the 50 years since the creation of the Black Panther Party by the founders Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. If you have any questions or comments, anything you would like to express, maybe you want to call in and thank Mr. Nokashore for his service to the Black community and to human rights and justice for all, you can do so by calling us at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. We'll be back on the other side of this quick message.
Marcus Mosiah Garvey once said, "The greatest weapon used against the Negro is disorganization." If you believe it is finally time to organize, if you believe Black people should have their own political party and understand the importance of block voting, but more importantly, understand and want to practice organized group economics, then you need to join the 1 million conscious contributors and voters. The founders of this organization hold firm to their belief that there are at least 1 million Black people, or 2 out of every 100 Black persons in this country, who have the best interests of Black people collectively foremost in their mind. Are you one of the 2? If so, please visit the 1 million Conscious Contributors and Voters website at IamOneOfTheMillion.com and be sure to join them for their national convention in Atlanta, October 21st through the 23rd, 2016. IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Just a few minutes here, we will be joined by Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore, a veteran activist, veteran revolutionary. He will be joining us from Canada as we get his reflections on the Black Panther Party, being that it impacted, possibly helped shape his life as a young man. So welcome to Black Talk Radio News. We broadcast this program every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. Go to Black Talk Radio Network if you're looking for independent, and I'm not just using that word. A lot of people say that they are independent. No, if you're looking for real independent Black media where people will give it to you straight, because we don't rely on corporations to fund and cover the cost of the media that we produce and keep our platform going. No, that is primarily supported by the donors to the Black Talk Media Project nonprofit and those who utilize our services that we offer to the public. So if you're looking for real independent voices who are not on anybody's plantation and who will give it to you straight as best they can, check out all the different programs and different radio stations on blacktalkradionetwork.com. Let's go ahead and see if we can connect with Brother Ross. Give me just a moment. I have to use Skype, and y'all know my struggles with Skype at times. So let's go ahead and see if we can get connected to Brother Ross, who's joining us again, will be joining us from Canada. If you have any questions for him, please don't wait to the last minute, as we only have him for a short time.
Hello.
Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore?
Yeah, this is me, man.
Hey, what is going on, my elder brother?
Hey, man, it's good to hear your voice, Scotty. How you doing, man? Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir. You coming in loud and clear. I'm doing the best I can under these terroristic conditions. You know we gonna keep it real on the network, Brother Ross. So that's how I'm doing down here behind these enemy lines. How are you, sir?
I hear you, man. Well, man, right now I'm just it's cold outside, and I'm in the north where the moose and the elk and the grizzlies and the polar bear roam. But I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing strong.
That's good to
hear.
Yeah. I didn't mean to call you an elder, like, you know, you an old man or something, but you are elder to me. You're a big brother. And it is just, I'm just, man, great to be able to call on a person like you instead of calling on these other people who can just talk about the Black Panther Party during this 50th anniversary, but was not directly involved with it, none of the program. So it's good that I could call on someone like you to come on and share your thoughts during this 50-year anniversary celebration and recognition of the many sacrifices still being made, as I, you know, talked about some of the political prisoners that's in prison now because of the Black struggle. So again, thank you, Brother Ross, for joining us and taking time out to make sure that at least our listeners will get the truth and they won't get it from some spin doctor on corporate media.
I appreciate that. I feel you on that.
Well, I think it'll be great to start. I already had read your extensive bio, but since we are talking about or focusing on the founding of the Black Panther Party, tell us, how old were you, Brother Ross, when you got exposed to them? How did you get exposed to them? And what caused you to become involved with the L.A. chapter of the party?
Okay, well, you know, I guess it was around March of 1968, but even prior to that, you know, the Black Panther Party was all in the news in California, you know, just based out of Oakland. You know, everything that you and them were doing, it was on constant loop in the news media, you know, so everybody in the community knew about the Black Panther Party. You know, now how I got exposed to the L.A. chapter, it was in March of 1968, right just a few months before my 11-year-old birthday. I was 10 years old. Me and my little homeboys and girls, we used to always hang out, you know, after school and mainly on the weekends because, you know, mom and pops didn't like us hanging out, you know, during the week. Nobody's mom and pop didn't like us hanging out, you know, out in the streets too much during the weekdays, but we used to hang out at this place, Clark's Drugstore. You know, this was before they had malls, you know what I'm saying? Like, this was like a strip mall, you know, but the Clark's Drugs was the main store, and there was a Vons there. And I started seeing these sisters. We started seeing these sisters show up, and they had afros, and they were selling the Black Panther Party. And, you know, we would go there just to play the dozens, you know, talk about each other, you know, talk about people walking in the store, you know, just being, you know, little kids, you know, from the hood, you know what I'm saying? You know, and every time we would approach these sisters, you know, we'd be joking and laughing and talking about people. They'd be laughing right along with us, but then they'd stop and school us on certain things, like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, you know, and it was amazing because these sisters were so, you know, they carried themselves in such a dignified and astute fashion that, you know, we listened to them, you know what I'm saying? And what they said made a lot of sense, even at that time. We didn't want to admit it or not, you know, like these sisters will be telling us some truths about, you know, the community and our people and what we should be doing as little young fellas, you know, respecting our elders and respecting, you know, sisters in the community, and we shouldn't be making fun of people like we were doing. And, you know, they made a lot of sense. And one thing, when you were a child, you know, and we all, you know, even some of my comrades today, we recognize that children know when something is true or fake. You know what I'm saying? You can't fool children, you know, and these sisters were real. you know, and nobody had ever talked to us like that, at least me at that time, you know, except, you know, some of my parents and uncles, you know what I'm saying? But these sisters were real, you know, and that's how I got first introduced. And one of them said, well, man, you know, little brothers, you know, why don't y'all come on down to the Panther office, you know, our headquarters, which at that time was on El Segundo and Willowbrook. And they had one in Compton also on Stockdale Street, which Geronimo and Brother Mo Bart ran, you know. But
when you say Brother Geronimo, are we talking Geronimo Pratt or somebody else?
We're talking about Geronimo Pratt.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, so from doing that, and these sisters were beautiful, they had beautiful afros, you know, and, you know, just based on their look and the way they carried themselves, well, we said, well, we're going to go down. Well, a lot of my friends didn't go down with me, but I went down there. And, you know, just so happened that Bunchy Carter was there, you know, talking to the brothers there. And he had, you know, the main office was on 41st and Central, but he was there. And, you know, I was listening to the brother rap, and he came up to me and said, how you doing, little brother? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, wow, you know what I'm saying? This is Bunchy Carter, you know what I'm saying? Like, I heard about him. And it just progressed from there, you know. And I started out just selling the newspaper, which to this day is the only paper I ever sold in my life. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I got involved.
Yeah,
you know,
we,
from that point on.
Yeah, as you are aware, we interviewed your comrade, Sister Jonina Abram Irvin, on Tuesday, and she was the last editor of that newspaper. And I have always tried to stress to our listeners how important real independent black media is. And that probably during that time period back then, what would you say the media offerings targeting black people was like? Were they getting snow-jobbed like we're getting snow-jobbed today? Or tell us about that.
Well, man, you know, like we had one main black newspaper in L.A. called the L.A. Sentinel. And it was a society paper, you know, like it was like who had their debonair ball and this and that, but they very seldom dealt with real grassroots issues. And the Panther came along and they blew all that up. I mean, like, you know, you can go anywhere, any barbershop, any liquor store, you saw people reading the Black Panther paper, you know, during that time. And they not only brought in a, you know, alternative media, but during that time period, I remember that there was a slew of black literature that you can get, especially dealing with the civil rights movement as well as the black liberation movement. You know, that books came out, you know, written by Panthers. You know, Eldridge Cleaver had his book, you know, but there were a slew of others. You know, Die Nigga Die during that time by H. Rye Brown, which was an excellent book. You know, books by both Huey and Bobby, you know what I'm saying? Like, all it was a slew of black literature that, you know, you could not escape, you know, the whole atmosphere during that period. Like, and it had a big impact on me during the time. Like, we were reading then. We were reading more back then than what I think many young people are reading now, you know, and I think that all that played a part in laying the seeds even for my political development. You know, because I looked at these sisters and brothers as mentors to me, and they were an inspiration to the community. And most important, you know, they had a real deep connection to just regular, everyday, working class, black and poor people, which was the majority in our communities.
Now, if I remember I don't know if we had a private conversation or if you shared this when you were co-host and co-producing Black Autonomy Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network, but you had mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, Brother Ross, but you had mentioned witnessing some of the COINTELPRO activities launched against the Panthers, whether it was the FBI or working with the local police or under the direction of the FBI. Tell us about that, if I remember that correctly. Didn't you witness some of the COINTELPRO activities that ultimately led to the destruction of the Panthers?
Yeah, well, you know, you know, sometimes, you know, when I had a chance, I would go to different farms and things, and, you know, that the Black Panthers were at, you know, just to support them, you know. And I would always go, you know, under the, like I had a chaperone because I was young, you know, but I would see different ministers, and there were other groups that would come out and would just try to denigrate the Panthers. You know what I'm saying? I remember in one meeting, there was some brother from CORE, you know, and he was disrespecting sisters and this and that. And he was just denigrating the Panthers, you know, talking about, you know, they weren't nothing but criminals and thugs, and that nobody should be listened to. And, you know, it was supposed to be in a panel with the Black Panthers and CORE, and others were supposed to have been speaking. And all this brother got up to do was denigrate CORE. And I come to find out later, you know, this guy, you know, I didn't know nothing about COINTELPRO, but I found out later, in later years, that, you know, this dude was set up to do that, you know, was, you know, in running the rhetoric of the state, you know what I'm saying? And I saw a lot of that even from Black preachers, you know, during that period, because everybody felt threatened, you know, by the brashness and revolutionary commitment that the Panthers had, you know, even elements of the Nation of Islam. You know, I saw some skirmishes between Panthers and them, you know, over some humbug, you know what I'm saying? But Bunchy was part of the Nation, you know, he kind of stalled on that stuff and said, you know what I'm saying? You know, we ain't going to fight other brothers and sisters. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we have to do it in another way. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of brother Bunchy Carter was. You dig what I'm saying? But yeah, there was a lot of that. You know what I'm saying? And specifically, you know, I witnessed the shootout that took place on 41st and Central, you know, which left a deep impact on our community. Brother Scotty.
And what was that, if you don't mind sharing that incident with the shootout? What happened there?
Well, you know, the police, you know, about 5 o'clock in the morning, which is really their thing, was, you know, during that period, you know, they were raiding Black Panther officers throughout the country. And, you know, I think this happened a few weeks prior or after, I can't remember right now, that Brother Fred Hampton was assassinated, you know, and they had planned to go in there and the Panther headquarters on 41st and Century shoot everybody was there. Well, the brothers, they were prepared, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, brothers like Wayne Farr, you know, like they had all been trained by Geronimo and others, you know, they were prepared for whatever's going to happen, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, so the LAPD didn't get the turkey shoot that they were looking forward to because these brothers fought back. And the community was out there just about from the time it started, once they heard the gunshots, till late in the evenings, man, out there, you know, watching this take place, you know, the whole community surrounding that headquarters. And even as far as back from where I was, you know, on the L.A. borderline of Compton and L.A., you know what I'm saying? Like, we went out there. You know, I got on my bike and went out there. You know what I'm saying? And brothers and sisters were ready. Like, if one Panther would have got shot, like, there would have been an uprising that day. You did, I said, that night with the whole community. Luckily, you know, it didn't go down like that. But it could have been far worse because, you know, the community was standing fast with members, those brothers and sisters of the Black Panther Party that were trapped in that hellhole and in that firefight with the LAPD.
Could you talk to us again as a young man back then, so very young, what were some of the type of programs? Because we know that self-defense is definitely the most known part of the legacy of the Black Panther Party, but I don't think enough focus is put on the social programs that they created, because it's not like during that period people could get a SNAP card and sign up for food stamps or get any kind of help, any kind of social services. There was no breakfast program in the schools. And in fact, the United States government directly took their school lunch program from the program offered by the Panthers. What were some of the programs in the Compton, L.A. area when you were a young man, and how was the community help? Could you see the impact that those programs were having?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, they had a food program, you know, where they would feed, you know, the poor and the elderly, especially, you know, in the communities. You know, they always had a monthly, you know, a food drive. You know, they had a prison program where they would take members from the community to prisons who had, you know, who had family members that were in prison. You know, they would take them on a bus or a van and make sure that they got the chance to see their relatives who were locked up. You know, they had programs like that. They had over 60 something programs, you know, in both the LA and the Oakland chapters. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of them didn't, you know, come online at one time. But, you know, these programs were real survival programs that were based on the needs of the community. You know, and the free breakfast program was a very popular one in L.A. because they fed a whole lot of kids, even myself at times. You know what I'm saying? You know, and it was a beautiful program. Like, a lot of people just focus on the fact that the Panthers had guns. But, you know, I never saw guns. You know what I'm saying? You know, in all the times I was there, I know they were around. You know, I know brothers were carrying at times, but, you know, all the brothers that I saw, they had history classes. They had martial arts classes. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they gave community drives for certain schools and communities that, you know, were in need. I mean, they did a lot that, you know, nobody even talks about, but the community knew, and they were accepted by, you know, at least where I grew up, by the majority of people in the neighborhood. You know, so they had over 60-something programs that, you know, have not even been equal to this day by any organization. You know, and they were all based around the needs of the people.
You know, we do have a caller. Would you mind taking a caller or two, Brother Ross?
I sure would not, man. Sure.
Okay. Well, before I pull up the caller, one of the things that a lot of people don't aware of, because I think recently was like Sickle Cell Awareness Day. It recently, recently passed. And so I was subscribed to the little organization that is putting out, you know, all this information on sickle cell and awareness. But I was like, at no time would you read their website, and it's not a criticism of them, because whoever is doing it may not even know that the Panthers provided much of the medical research and finding a cure and treatments for sickle cell. And wow.
The Panthers were the first to find it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
They were the first to find that, you know, we had this sickle cell trait and even the disease within our community. It was the Black Panther Health Program that they founded, Black Panther Health Clinic.
We have a caller from the area code 910. Thank you for calling in. We have Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore on the line as we reflect on the Black Panther Party, and he's speaking specifically about the impact on his life, what he witnessed directly. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brother Ross. Good afternoon, Brother Reed. This is Zion from North Carolina. First and foremost, Brother, I just wanted to thank you for your energy that you have put in for, you know, the efforts of helping your community. And I just wish that it was more of our brothers right now, you know, trying to do positive things that you've done, you know, for us.
Yes.
And I say us as a whole.
I can't hear.
Okay.
You can't hear me, brother?
You can't hear him. Brother Ross, give me just a second. Caller 910, go ahead again. Let me check my audio.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear him now, Brother Ross?
Nope.
You can hear me, though?
Wow. I can hear you, but I can't hear the caller.
Caller, if you would, apparently we're having some kind of issue with the conference line. Call us on the studio line, 704-951-5030. Let me get that number out again. Apparently we're having some issue with the conference line, so I'm going to connect you to the direct line that he is on. And that number again is 704-951-5030. Do you want to chime back? I mean, do you want to give us a call on that line, 910 and 973?
Definitely.
Okay, I'm about to
call right now.
Yes, sir. Sorry about that, Brother Ross. Apparently, we're having
Q&A queue is cleared.
Some kind of issue with the lines that has never happened before. But he's going to call back in on our studio line. So, Brother Ross, while we wait for his call to come in, what would you say in terms of heightened periods of struggle that we are in right now compared to, let's say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, going back to when the Panthers were really active? Because me personally, I feel like there have been like ebbs and flows on a chart, you know, periods of heightened resistance and then, you know, periods of relative quiet.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, right now, you know, the conditions of our people, in my view, are even worse than they were back 30 years ago, 50 years ago when the Panthers started.
Brother Ross, you still there?
At the tone, please record your message.
Okay.
When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press pound for further options.
Okay, looks like we got disconnected from Brother Ross. We're going to try him again. Give me just a second. Oh, man, I tell you, I'm not surprised that this is happening. So let's try it again. Okay, 973, do we have you on the line? Okay, let me see if I can add. Come on, Skype, act right now. Add to group call. 973, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very clearly, Mr. Reed and Dad.
Okay, now 910. Trying to add that person. 910, can we hear you?
I can hear you, Brother Scotty.
Okay. Y'all allow hold just 1 second while I get Brother Ross added to the line. No, I don't want to add Mr. Sorry about these issues. Hopefully we will work through them here shortly as we reach out back out to Brother Ross. And it's acting like it does not want to call him. Oh, wow. I'm so sorry about this. Let me see if I can remove him and then add him back. Let's see. And it's not allowing me to call him. 910. I'm going to send him a message to try to call us because it's not allowing me to connect to him. So I'm going to send him a message. But what were you wanting to express?
Well, basically, the first thing, I wanted to thank him for his time and energy and supporting, you know, us as a whole back in the day with the community. And second, I guess it was a comment to try to ask, you know, what can a brother like myself do? Because I've always been interested in the Black Panther Party. Even when my stepfather, you know, brought it to my attention, he used to show us the papers, you know, that his brother used to mail to him. And I just wanted to get, you know, a little, I don't know, I ain't gonna say advice, but, you know, some kind of insight on what, you know, we could do to, you know, start something like that in our community to get something going like that.
I would just say study what they, we have a wealth of history and what these men did and how they did it, men and women, I'm sorry, and how they did. And I believe in not reinventing the wheel. It ain't nothing to do it, brother, but to do it.
That's right.
Let me send Brother Ross the number. I'm not sure if he has the number. 951-5030. I hate for our call with him to end like that. I will continue. 973, what would you like to add?
Well, I'd like to say good afternoon to Mr. Reed and to the guests. I'm here holding a whole bunch of political prisoners' sheets on them. There's a Romaine Ship Fitzgerald. There's Nebraska 2 at Poindexter, Mondo Villana, Verona Bauer Jr., Black Panther, Jamal Alameen, Campaign for Parole, Jaquel Al-Matan. There's JoJo Browser, a BL soldier, Sukati, of course, Sungati Akoli, Nenar Pfeiffer, Maliki Latini, Campaign to Parole, Robert Steph Hayes, Russell Maroon Shatta, Matula Shakur, and we got Herman Bell here, the guy you just talked about, Robert Steph Hayes, denied for the 10th time, Anthony Bottom, a.k.a. Jaquil Aquin, jailed at 19, denied for the 9th time. And I'm just looking at all this stuff in front of me, and I'm saying to myself, you know, we have such black, strong men who are locked up in jail. And I'm just thinking the people, I mean, the ones, it's like, why is it like, what happened that they got in jail and the others didn't? I know there were so many of, you know, Black Panthers. Are they still reaching out to them? Is there any way they can be free? Also, during that time in the 60s, there were several organizations. There was, I mean, civil rights fronts going on per se. They were the Black Panthers. They were Malcolm X followers. There were Martin Luther King. And I want to ask him, why did he particularly pick the Black Panther Party per se to go with? I mean, you know, I just want to know. And if he had anything to change that he, while he was in here, would he have done anything differently, sir? Those are my questions. And I'm just shouting out to people because I got Panthers of all of them, their history and everything. And I'm just thinking how these men are still behind bars of crimes they just didn't commit. I mean, you know, when we look at the 13, and I had opportunity to view it, you see that it was all concerted. It was a concerted effort to get these people behind jail. I mean, to say that the Black Panther Party was the most threatening to the society of America, that it would bring it down by Hoover, I mean, this is all a concerted effort. And, you know, looking in retrospect, I mean, if anybody needs to be out of jail after hearing that it was a concerted effort, then these people should be free. I mean, these men have, you know, they're in, I guess they're in the 50s and 60s right now. I'm looking at Jaquel Aquin, jailed at 19, denied for the 19-year-old. I mean, they never had a life to live, Mr. Reed. And, I mean, 19 years old? This is unbelievable, and I'm just so happy. You know, they talk about black men, but I'm just so happy that these men stood up and fought for what was right. So those are the sentiments.
I'm trying to reach him on another system. Scotty got backup systems for backup systems.
Hello?
Brother Ross, can you hear me?
I can hear you, man.
Okay. Callers, can you hear Brother Ross?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Glad I was able to resolve that issue. Sorry, Brother Ross. We have two callers on the line. I'm going to go ahead and let the lady speak first. Go ahead and ask him your question, ma'am.
First of all, I want to say thank you so much for the courage you have demonstrated and you proved to black women. You know, I'm just happy. You know, I'm like I was just telling Mr. Reed, I'm going down memory lane with all these Panthers I have in reference to the Black Panther Party participants who are in jail right now. I'm looking at Romaine Ship Fitzgerald. Does that ring a bell? There's
Who's that?
That's Romaine Ship Fitzgerald, Black Panther political prisoner serving life in prison. Fitzgerald, Romaine
Ship.
Okay, yes. I'm looking at Nebraska 2, Ed Poindexter, Mondo Willana.
Mondo has died. He passed away.
Right. Yes, he passed away.
I'm looking at Veronica Bowers Jr., Black political officer.
Yes.
Yes. There's Jamil Alameen, Trump up conviction 40 years in the making. Campaign parole, PLL Montanquin. Right, he was jailed at 19 years old. Jailed in 1971.
I think that's Montakim is how you pronounce his last name. Jaleel right. Montakim.
Right.
Exactly.
Jaleel.
And then
there's
JoJo Bowen, ABLA soldier. You remember him, JoJo Bobo Bowen? Of course, we know Poli. There's Maliki Latin.
Right.
Campaign Robert Duff Haynes. There's Russell Moon Shaata. Is that correct?
No, that's Russell Maroon Schultz.
But Schultz.
Yes, but he is a caller. He is aware. I mean, there are like over 100. Well, how many people would you say, Brother Ross?
What I would say is that I'm so proud that these black men stood up. And what I was talking to Mr. Reed before you got online, the question I wanted to ask you is, there were like, I guess, three fronts going on back in the 60s. There was the Black Panther Party. There was the movement with Malcolm X. There was the movement with the civil rights, Martin Luther King. And my question to you is, why the Black Panther Party? Why not the other front? And my second part of that tier question, I was just shouting out these people because I have them all in front of me, and I'm listening to you, and I'm just thinking about these people.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, did we just lose her? Brother Ross, you still there? Okay, looks like we're getting a lot of interference going on with the broadcast, with our communication system right now. I'm not surprised. I'm not given who our guest is today, so all I can do is try to push through it until my system comes back. Do want to allow Brother Ross Munyega Nokashore to go ahead and give his last comment. So let me see which systems I got disconnected from. Okay, it looks like we're still connected to the conference line. Let me look at this line. Brother Ross, are you there? Okay, looks like he got disconnected. Again, we are off the internet. That's what's going on. So I am going to have to reset everything. I will be back on the other side of this short break.
This service is provided in high definition by free conference call HD.com.
This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
All right, what we are experiencing is internet problems. So we were disconnected from the internet. I don't know if y'all saw the news today, but the internet has been under attack. Well, I shouldn't say the internet. What I should say is internet providers have been under attack by hackers today. I really did not have any issues, and I can't say what this issue was related to, but we are back on air. Sorry about that. Glad that we keep a local podcast, but let's see if we can get Brother Ross back on. And I'll get ready.
Somebody must not be liking what we're saying on the phone today.
Yeah, that must be the case. But I'm glad we're able to get you back. And the caller, I believe she's still on the line. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Her last question, as we, you know, working towards the end of this interview, her question was, why weren't the other groups besides the Black Panther Party? You had the Nation of Islam, you had the different civil rights affiliated organizations. Why weren't they targeted? But I don't want to answer for you, but my understanding was that they were targeted. That's why King is dead and others. So, Brother Ross, your comments?
Yeah, well, you're right. They were targeted, but none were targeted as severely as members of the Black Panther Party. You know, because of the revolutionary stance and vision that they had, and because of their survival programs per se. I think that, you know, the Panthers posed a threat to the government of the United States like no other group in history. You know, they were our own homegrown organic revolutionaries, and they were committed about serving the people heart and soul. And the only way that the FBI could destroy them was to create division among the different chapters and among the leaders, you know, and which led to paranoia and its downfall. And you talk about, like, these brothers who the sister mentioned, you know, they should never be forgotten, and they should be celebrated because they are our warriors and heroes. I think that, you know, after the Panthers went into electoral politics, I can say, like, I was, you know, a teenager during that time, and it lost a lot of credibility. You know, that's one of the bittersweet things I have. It really lost a lot of credibility in the hood, especially the Oakland chapter, you know, by the leadership running for political office, you know, and that's when I pulled out, you know, because, you know, I believed in, you know, the revolutionary commitment and the vision that they had. And after that, you know, like, I moved around for a long time, and it was only groups like RAM, you know, that, picked me back up and gave me some encouragement, you know, which I was with for 13 years. And they introduced me to a lot of the brothers and sisters that she mentions, you dig what I'm saying, and their cases. You know, because they were mainly an East Coast thing, you know. But we should not forget any of these brothers. And you talk about how many people that are political prisoners. Well, I even include those people in exile, and there's some that are on the down low, you know, that are all over the world, you know, who are still maintaining that commitment, you know, but are, you know, and some I even affiliate with to this day, but, you know, are witnessing, you know, and are waiting, you know, when our people are going to understand that, you know, this struggle is not over, and right, that what these brothers sacrificed should never be forgotten. And that's all I can say about that at this point, because it's something deep to my heart, and I don't want to get emotional about that. But yeah, you know, they are our comrades, they are our brothers, and even some sisters. They should not be forgotten. I know the closest brother that I was closest to that was also in exile, because when I went into exile, like, he helped me out a lot, and that was Brother D.C. Cox, you know, and I can't give enough praise to that brother, because he helped me tremendously.
I'm also thinking about Brother Pete O'Neill on the continent.
Yeah. And right on. Yeah, Brother Pete, definitely a good brother, you know what I'm saying? He created a sanctuary for brothers that were in the movement to go and just rest, you know what I'm saying? You know,
you know, when he first started that community center. You know, that is what it was initially for, you know, when it branched off. You know, once you're a true revolutionary, you never retire. And, you know, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, caller, I'm going to try to pick up on the other calls in the conference line. Did you have anything in closing you wanted to leave with Mr. Ross Munyega, Noka Shore?
I did. In closing, what advice would you give to the Black Lives Matter, sir? What, I mean, you know, like you said, it's funny because we have a Black Panther in our organization, and he says, once a Black Panther, you can't say he's a former Black Panther, because you have to say, once a Black Panther, always a Black Panther. He corrected me. So I feel you, woman. He said, you always, it doesn't mean former, but you're true to the revolutionary movement. But what would you give? And that was a good question, Scotty. That wasn't really the question. The question I asked him was, did you answer? I'm sorry, because I got the internet was not working correctly. My question is, what would you have done differently if you had to do it all over again? If there's anything you would have done differently, looking at, like, maybe Black Lives Matter, maybe where they can do something that maybe you looked at and said, wow, if I would have had the opportunity to know what I know now, I would have done it this way. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll continue to remember you in my prayers.
Thank you. I appreciate that. One thing I would have done differently, that, you know, I would have stayed closer to the will and desires of the people. You know, sometimes, you know, we put too much on leadership, you know, and our leaders are just human too. You know, and when they begin to sway or go a different path, by their own human weaknesses, you know, we still try to prop them up, you know, and, you know, the people should always come first. And I think when they got involved in electoral politics and things like that, it kind of led them astray. And that whole campaign was also about COINTELPRO from the way people in my community saw it, you know, and I speak for, you know, I saw this and heard the talk from all the brothers and sisters in the hood that I grew up with, and that were my cadre, you know, and friends and neighbors, you know, that they thought that that was, you know, the downfall of the party, you know, and it was never the same really after that, you know, but they carried a legacy that is unrivaled to this day, you know. And sister was asking about Black Lives Matter. You know, it was movements today must relate to the black poor, you know, and the underclass, you know, and workers, you know, because that's where the leadership of the Black Panther Party came from. And it was George Jackson who said that, you know, fascism grows when the people, and even our own people, start to identify, you know, with the politics of the power structure, you know, in demeaning that element of society. Because the ruling class understands that it's that element of society that is always for revolutionary change. And when the Panthers got at their weakest points due to all the assassinations, due to all the imprisonments and things like that, there was this whole campaign that came in pushing a black capitalist agenda and a black middle class agenda that split the whole movement apart. You know, and it allowed for this floodgates of all this opportunism to sit in, you know, and it wasn't nobody's fault. I mean, that was the tactic of the state, you know. To this day, I think that the original members of the Black Panther Party and the sisters and brothers, you know, we all, and they did the best that they can do under those conditions, you know, and I think nobody had the full understanding that the state will attack them in the most vicious way that it did. You know, it was almost unbelievable until the COINTELPRO papers came out. You know, so I would tell movements today, though, that in spite of that, learn from the lessons of that, but we can never withdraw from principled, sincere, and righteous revolutionary struggle, that we must have a revolutionary vision. We must have a vision based on the poor and the majority of our people. Like, it was W. Du Bois who said that a nation should be judged on how it treats its majority of poor and the disenfranchised, not the few at the top. You know, and that's and that always stuck with me. And that was the core essence of the Black Panther Party that made them so effective. And groups like Black Lives Matter, you know, they need to understand that and develop a revolutionary program, you know, and a vision, and become active and defend it, you know, because that is what gives you credibility among the people. You know what I'm saying? And I'm hoping it's not too late that they can do that, you know, but time will tell. I know they got a lot of funding from a lot of heavy hitters, you know, on the private and funding, you know, industrial complex, I call it, you know, and, you know, the more funding you get, you know, you have to answer to the piper, you know what I'm saying? You know, so can they make that break? I don't know. Time will tell. But groups got to remain independent and autonomous, you know, and keep the will of the people, you know, keep their will and their self-determination the number one priority, you know, beyond anything else.
Thank you, 973. I'm going to move on to the next caller. That is area code 719. Let's try this again. Hopefully, Brother Ross will be able to hear those in the conference line. Go ahead, 719.
What's up, Brother Scotty? It's Ramon for the from the 719.
Greetings. Can you hear him, Brother Ross?
Yeah, I can hear. I've been on. How you doing there, Mr. Ross, sir? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Glad you called, brother. Okay. How you doing?
It's an honor. It's an honor. It's a big honor, believe me, to hear and talk with someone of your magnitude to still be here with us. My question, sir, I have two. The first one is, what does infiltration look like? What could you share with us that we could start to look for within our own ranks as we try to mobilize and push our agendas forward? And what I mean by that is, if infiltration was to come in the face of a person, what should we look for? If it's going to come in the form of offerings, what should we look for? And then my second question would be, what do you feel about arms with today's climate? I mean, is it any worse than your time? Should we be restructuring ourselves to become people of familiar with, you know, with weapons and strategies of how to use weapons accordingly? I mean, what is your take on that, sir?
Yes, you have some very good questions, my brother. First, in terms of infiltration, I try to answer that. An infiltrator will come in any form. You know, it can come as a most beautiful sister. It can come as somebody's grandmother. You wouldn't know. But how you would know it, though, is their commitment, first of all. You know, their commitment is only some timing. You know, their commitment is only based on when somebody only wants to do a certain thing all the time, but has a bank hour kind of commitment. You know what I'm saying? It's not 24/7. You know, also, you know, you can recognize and identify infiltrator by the things they say and the thing they do. You know, most of the time they be talking some outlandish and random and whack kind of actions. You know, now, not all the time that's an infiltrator. That could be a brother who got a lot of fire in them, or a sister got a lot of fire in them. But when it gets so outlandish that it's just totally ridiculous and that will put people in harm's way, you may want to check that. You know what I'm saying? And you may want to check that person. You dig what I'm saying? You don't want to go too far over the people, but you don't want to be behind the people either. You know, you want to keep a balance of being right what the people need. And sometimes you got to just seize the time and do what you got to do. But all that is done collectively and as an organization and as a revolutionary principle that the whole group decides upon. You know, but be leery of those who are just talk very outlandish, you know, and unprincipled, you know, because that's how infiltrators try to destroy movements. Now, you talked about the arm thing. You know, in this period, it seems like so many young millennials got aversion to arms, unless it comes to, you know, fighting against each other, you know. But what you said in terms of should the people be learning how to use arms and training with arms and this and that, yes, I would say most definitely, because right now, you know, we do need some type of defense, you know, against all these police killings that are taking place in our community, you know. And the state is not going to tell you that, you know, these preachers are not going to tell you that, you know, Al Sharpton is not going to tell you that, you know, a lot of these propped up leaders will not tell you that, because they in support of the state. Matter of fact, any time within the past few years, the community rose up, you know, and started fighting back. You know, here come the people to try to dissuade, you know, and deflect, you know, from that type of struggle. You know, that's why we need an organized movement to do that, you know, and that should not be off the table. You know, self-defense is one of the first laws of nature. And we should always not be afraid to carry that principle out when need be, you know. But it should be a final option. The first option is to educate and organize the people. I hope that answered your question, brother.
Yes, it did. And I have one more, if you don't mind, sir.
No, go ahead, my brother.
Okay. How can we structure an obviously it would be correct to say that the Black Panthers probably had some type of screening to some degree to, you know, get the right people in and the right people in the right places. Could you share with us a little bit how we could learn from that and figure out how to screen the people, you know, like I guess like an application, if that's the easiest way to understand my question. But what would we have on that application as a way of really screening people's true intentions?
Well, you know, from the very get-go, though, you should have in your principles and bylaws that, you know, anybody affiliated with the police or work for the police are not allowed within the Black Panther Party, or with any kind of organization you're trying to accomplish. You dig what I'm saying? Like, you know, that should be straight up. You dig? No cops allowed. Now, of course, you're going to have people trying to infiltrate. You know what I'm saying? And really, you know, the best thing I can tell any group that is trying to organize today is to follow your instincts, because that's your biggest clue. You know, and your instincts are never wrong. You know, but you have to have written within your bylaws most definitely that, hey, you know, if there are any cops within this group that they are not welcome here. You dig what I'm saying? Like, cops are not welcome. You know, that should be within your bylaws or any state agents. You know, and
That's part of the terms of service for our new social media platform, BTR Community.
Exactly.
No
exactly.
Cops allowed, no slave catchers, none of that. Nope.
Exactly. And believe it or not, you know, it kind of screens out a lot, but, you know, you always going to have those who, you know, are going to try to infiltrate. You know, it just comes part of it. That should not make you paranoid, though. It's like the thing is, sometimes, and even you, we talked about, you know, we give them too much power, you know, when, you know, everybody's human, you know, and you just got to follow your instinct and follow your revolutionary vision and principles, you know, and that's what needs to be built up to today. You know, I think we're living in more of a time now where defense of our community is much more needed, you know, like the brother in Baton Rouge, I think he said, an excellent example, and so did the brother in Dallas. You know, they were demonized by the media, but they carried out their mission, you know, and they should be celebrated, you know, because they showed us a different way forward and an alternative, you know, and what, you know, can be done. And
Brother Ramon, did you have anything you want to say in closing as we already wrap up?
Yes, sir. I just simply wanted to say, once again, it's an honor, brother, to hear from you and to know that you're still with us and hopefully many more that we're not getting mainstream information to know. And also, I just wanted to say, I do believe you are a true Panther, because I will be honest, this is the first time on this show I've listened since I started that Scotty has had that much interruption and interference. So it tells me somebody knows you're active, and I believe you should know that there's people like myself that are out here, and we stand with you, brother, and we love you, and keep your head up, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Brother Ramon. And yeah, me, Scotty and I, we have been through this before, and during this disruptions.
Right. Well, brother,
ain't that right, Brother Scotty?
Yeah, that's certainly right. Brother Ross, I want to thank you again. Did you have any thoughts that you would like to leave with the listeners? And we're going to I will take it upon myself to keep reaching out to you brothers and sisters from that time period, even though I'm not doing political prisoner radio anymore because of some things that were happening. But I'm going to start including, you know, more focus on this program, BTR News, and I hope I can call on you in the future again. And anytime, you know, you can reach out to me, anything we need to get out to our listening audience. But did you have any final thoughts to leave with the people?
Yes, you know, I just would like to say that, you know, don't give up. You know, right now, you know, we are being tested like no other time before. And they wouldn't want to break the backs of our movement. But you see, look today where the resistance is coming from. You know, the resistance is coming from the everyday people out there on the streets and in these poor and working class black communities. And that's where our base should be. And that's where we should organize. We should not be afraid of our own, you know. And that's where the revolutionary potential is. And we need to connect with that. We need to develop that leadership within them. And we need to start moving forward. You know, all these other groups, you know, if you look at them today, they're not effective because they all got a middle class and an opportunistic kind of background and bent. You know, we have to change that. We have to get back to loving the people, heart, mind, body, and soul, and having that total commitment. Because it's going to take total commitment to free Africans here in the United States and worldwide throughout the diaspora. Our ancestors demand nothing less. And that's all I have to say about that. And all power to the people.
Well, again, thank you, Brother Ross. I'm definitely going to stay in touch with you more than I have over the past couple of years. And you just stay safe, man, up there in where you are, because to me, the whole planet is a battlefield, and they got slave catchers out there everywhere. And so we will definitely be keeping you in our prayers. But like you said, in closing, all power to the people, Brother Ross.
Man, take care, Brother Scotty. Thanks for calling, and I appreciate all the callers too. They were very good questions today. I appreciate that, Scotty.
You're welcome. You have a great day, sir.
You too. Take care. About the people.
Right, that was Brother Ross Munyega, Noka Shore. Definitely got to get back in contact with our elders and start having them come on the network more regularly. I just got a lot of things that I'm doing all at once, so but I can make that happen. Certainly I can make that happen, because they are a wealth of information, experience, and knowledge. Now, I want to take a station identification break, and then when I come back, I want to get into some of these clips. The one I really want to play is Bobby Seale talking about the Black Panther Party 10-point program. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network. We will be back on the other side.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Give up on my way. Oh, yeah. Hey, could maybe crazy.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Hey, could maybe crazy. Hey, could you step for crazy. Could maybe crazy.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Again, like I stated before we went to that little short break, want to play the clip of Bobby Seale talking about the 10-point program, which gave birth to the Black Panther Party. As we talked to Sister Jonina Abram Irvin on Tuesday, she said that that is when the Panther Party, Black Panther Party, was born, was once they completed their work on the 10-point program. So allow me to go to this video. Let me shut this background music down. And this is Bobby Seale talking about the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party in 1968.
I got to explain to you also your soul, your needs, your political desires and needs, because that is Huey's soul. When we first organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, he would say, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform, just basic, that black people can read. He says, we don't want to go real elaborate with all these essays and dissertations and all this stuff, because the brother gonna look at that and he can say, man, I ain't got time for that. I gotta go see what I can do for myself. It's just a basic platform that the mothers who struggle hard to raise us, that the fathers who worked hard, that the young brothers in school who come out of school semi-illiterate. You say, we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our black community, full employment for our people. Number three, we want housing fit, decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. Number four, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. Number five, we want decent education for our black people in our community that teaches us the true nature of this decadent racist society, and to teach black people and our young black brothers and sisters their place in the society, because if they don't know their place in society and in the world, they can't relate to anything else. Number six, we want an end to the robbery by the white racist businessmen of black people and black people in their community. Number seven, we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. Black men held in county, state, federal jails and prisons to be released because they have not had a fair trial, because they've been tried by all white juries, and that's just like being tried in Germany being a Jew. Number eight, we want black people, number nine, when brought to trial, to be tried by members of their peers. And a peer being one who comes from the same economic, social, religious, historical, and racial background. If the United States government and the courts and the local courts did this, they would have to choose black people from the black community to sit up on the jury. They'd have to choose some of the mothers who've been working 20 years in Miss Ann's kitchen scrubbing floors like my mother done. They have to choose some of them hard-working fathers. They have to choose some of those brothers who stand on the block out there wondering where they're going to get a gig. They're going to have to choose these black people. And number 10, he would say, let's just summarize it. We want housing, we want clothing, we want education, we want justice, and we want peace. This is the basic platform. In case you never knew it or not, of all the things that you've heard in the press, of all the derogatory statements that's been made in the press about Brother Huey P. Newton and I, of all these derogatory statements to guide you away from seeing this basic platform that Huey was talking about for his own people. We have to learn to look through the white press. We have to learn to see what's going on. Now, out of this platform, Huey P. Newton realized that it was necessary for us to start working on these points, these 10 points, practically. Remember number seven? We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. This is very, very important. And here, whether you know it or not, is where you start dealing with the black revolution. When Huey says every black man put a shotgun in your home, and once we let the man know, say, look, we armed from block to block, and we're going to patrol you from our windows. And we're not going to have you brutalizing none of our people in the streets. Do you realize what kind of power black people have then? Because you begin to neutralize that police force, because them cops going to start riding shaking and scared. In fact, we're in a position then to demand that they withdraw from our community because they occupy our community just like a foreign troop occupies territory. Very important to understand. We hate cops beating black people over their heads and murdering them. That's what we hate. If you got enough energy to sit down and hate a white person just because of the color of his skin, you wasted a lot of energy. You better take that same energy and put it in some motion out there and start dealing with those oppressive conditions, and you're going to find out just what you hate and what you're going to stop. Black people, we are organizing to stop racism. You dig it? When you stop racism, you stop brutality and murder of black people by the racist occupying army in our black community. That's what we're going to stop. What's being done to us? You dig it? Can you dig the white power structure and this racist police force and how they've escalated the situation? That before Watts, there was 1,300 cops. Now there's 6,000 cops patrolling black people. That in Oakland, they had 350 cops just 3.5 years ago. Now they got 1,000 cops patrolling black people. San Francisco's double its police force. And every area, major metropolis where black people live all across this country, they've doubled, tripled, and quadrupled their police force, equipped them with tanks, all kinds. We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
So that was Bobby Seale. Again, many other things that he talked about, all of the things, all the 10-point program need immediate implementation. But the problems plaguing our community, we still plagued by slave catchers. And he was just what? Talking about in 1968, militarization of the police. All right. Where they are basically a military force. These are not peace officers. These are not justices of the peace. These are violent slave catchers. And this is an issue that here people are talking about in 2016 as the police departments are being armed with military surplus goods that you pay for. This is Huey P. Newton. Also from 1968, he was being interviewed in jail after he was accused of allegedly killing a slave catcher and wounding another one.
In America, black people are treated very much as the Vietnamese people or any other colonized people, because we're used, we're brutalized. The police in our community occupy our area, our community, as a foreign troop occupies territory. And the police are there not to, in our community, not to promote our welfare or for our security and our safety, but they're there to contain us, to brutalize us and murder us, because they have their orders to do so. And just as the soldiers in Vietnam have their orders to destroy the Vietnamese people, the police in our community couldn't possibly be there to protect our property, because we own no property. They couldn't possibly be there to see that we receive the due process of law, for the simple reason that the police themselves deny us the due process of law. And so it's very apparent that the police are only in our community, not for our security, but the security of the business owners in the community, and also to see that the status quo is kept intact. When we first started, we had a police alert patrol, and we would patrol the community. If we saw the police brutalize anyone, we would put an end to this. Usually the police wouldn't brutalize anyone if we were on hand, because we were armed, and if the police arrested the individual, we would follow him to the jail and bail the individual out, whether he was a Panther or not. And we would gain many recruits like this, so therefore the community started to say that, well, these people are really concerned about our welfare. We feel that the white students should relate and pay more attention to the colonized situation here of the blacks first, because after all, this is home. And they should. This is not to say that they shouldn't denounce America's treacherous actions abroad. I think they can be done at the same time. That it's just a matter of placing emphasis upon the criminal activities of America here in the homeland.
That was one of the co-founders, again, Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton, who we just heard from, the late Huey P. Newton. May he rest in power. And again, this could be commentary. It is commentary that applies to today's headlines, to today's situations, to this struggle that's going on today. Nothing has changed. Now, again, I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. I don't believe in that. And that strategy, what both of them talked about in terms of dealing with slave catchers in our community, if those things were being implemented today, if the communities came together who are impacted by modern day slavery and human trafficking, if they follow those suggestions, and not just suggestions, but the activities the Panthers were engaged in, I believe that we would see a reduction in violence and slave catching in our communities. I really, truly believe that. So, but again, do want to stress that the Panthers were more than just about armed self-defense, but they were a help to the community and not a hindrance. And we need people with skill, with talent in many different areas. Like they had the newspaper, the national newspaper. I kind of feel like blacktalkradionetwork.com serves that role today in the various programs that you'll hear on our network, not just these programs, but the stations. We're serving that role of our own media and source of information and analysis of what's going on globally and nationally. We are serving that purpose. But then there are others. You may have strong suits in other areas. Maybe you just came back from Afghanistan or Iraq. You were like me, joined as a young man, not really knowing what I was joining and what I was doing. Perhaps you would be perfectly suited to start up these self-defense units in our communities and be leaders in that area. Everybody has a role. Everybody can contribute. So I just want, especially the donors, people who have seen the importance of our work, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for helping us stay on air and in some cases expand our media operations. Because we are not, like Brother Ross was just talking about, being co-opted by these people with deep pockets, and whoever pays the piper names the tune. So you certainly have played your role in helping our operations remain autonomous. So thank you. Everybody has a role. The last clip that I want to play, probably won't be able to play it all. We have Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So I only have about 5 minutes left, and I have to change out our YouTube stream and restart the conference. So I'm going to go ahead. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal talking about the mainstream media. He is behind bars right now, is a political prisoner. He worked for the Black Panther Party as a young man, as a teenager, working on the paper. And of course, he is internationally known right now as a global voice in black journalism and revolutionary journalism. Still behind bars, and they trying to kill him. Please see the information that was posted in our group on btrcommunity.com about his Hep C. We also did a radio broadcast with Sister Johannin. Just forgot her last name, but check out. We'll be posting more and more information in our group, Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War. But this is Mumia who has been in prison since the 80s, was on death row, but people fought, didn't give up, didn't lose hope, and he's off death row, but they still trying to kill him. But this is him speaking on media.
I mean, sad to say, you tell me if you disagree. To me, the mainline media has been bought up by large corporations, and through that, it's also being highly censored. That's my impression of the mainline media today. Of course, to everything, there are also exceptions.
That's exactly, I believe you're absolutely true enough. To give you some examples, if I may. When I was down in Philadelphia at my petition hearing, I was being brought back to the prison, and the sheriffs had turned the radio on. I was listening to the news, and the newscaster said, "This just in, there's a bulletin. ABC, American Broadcasting Corporation, has just been acquired by Disney Corporation." And I laughed. And I was in the back, and I was just laughing. I said, "Well, I guess we're going to have Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck on the news tonight, right?" But that's just one out of many, you know. We used to talk about, almost the same way I said earlier about politicians, we used to talk about the media being in the hip pocket of big business and being controlled by big business. Well, today, the major media are big business. They are part of these multinational huge corporations. And if you think they don't control what comes into that camera lens and out on that TV screen, well, come on. If I own you, I control you. If I pay you, I tell you what to say and what not to say. And when you look at the news today, I'm talking now about a national network newscast. The similarities between, think about this, Christoph, the similarities between a national network newscast and what used to be a local newscast are astounding. Local crime stories become national news stories. Not because of anything extraordinary about that, but that's the stuff that they're feeding out there. They don't feed pieces that talk about the fundamental relationships of power and rank and status in this country. They talk about sensation, you know. It's almost as if the average newscast is produced by Hard Copy or one of these other, you know, shows like that. Just, it's trash. But it's trash that's designed to attract you emotionally, to touch you sensationally, to get you looking, but not to get you thinking. Not to question the fundamental relationships of power, of wealth, of justice, of injustice. Those issues, they don't apply, you see. They do not question the relationship and the rightness of power. They take that for granted, you see. And when you ally that and you put that in concert with the political machinery that's in place today, I'm talking about the right-wing shift in American politics, well, you have a dangerous and a deadly and a malevolent concoction. That's what you have. That's what you have. You know.
All right, we're going to end it there. You can catch the rest of that interview. It is posted in btrcommunity.com on my profile page, which my profile, you can find me, Scotty T, on btrcommunity.com. I want to thank our guest, Revolutionary Elder Brother Ross Munyega Noka Shore, for joining us today and hanging in there through all of those interruptions and difficulties with our communication system. I want to thank all the callers for calling in and showing respect to this elder and for your questions, okay? That's how we find answers, is by asking questions. And we have to take advantage of the wealth of knowledge and wisdom and information that we can get from such elders like Brother Ross. All right, so that's my program. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc. Slavery is still the supreme law of the land, and everything that you see that is wrong in the world emanates from that. Slavery is imposing your will on the free will of others and taking away their free will. And some of us are more enslaved than others. And with that said, a shout out to the brothers and sisters who are on the prison plantations today, going into their fourth or fifth week of their strike against prison slavery. That's the kind of awakening that we need. That's the sort of revolutionary activity that we need in this period. So with that said, everyone, be safe out there. Peace and blessings to all. I'm out.